One of the key takeaways from Robert Mueller's congressional testimony last week was his statement that the Russians are still interfering with American elections. Here's his exchange with Texas Republican Will Hurd.
In your investigation, did you think that this was a single attempt by the Russians to get involved in our election, or did you find evidence to suggest they'll try to do this again?
Oh, it wasn't a single attempt. They're doing it as we sit here, and they expect to do it during the next campaign.
Then, on the day after the former special counsel testified, the Senate Intelligence Committee released a report that said Moscow probably targeted elections in all 50 states in 2016. But the United States hasn't been Russia's only target when it comes to election interference. There is a long history of Russian election meddling. And joining us to talk about that is Matthew Rojanski, who's director of the Kennan Institute at the Wilson Center. Welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks, Jeremy.
So first of all, what is your take on the significance of what we just heard there from Robert Mueller and from the Senate Intelligence Committee last week about what's going on right now as we speak?
In terms of significance, it is enormously significant because elections are absolutely foundational to our understanding of what democracy and our representative Republican form of government, Republican with a small r, is. The fact that our elections turn out not to be as secure and sacrosanct as we thought they were is a problem, but it doesn't reflect a fundamental problem in the importance of those institutions. But, and this is a big caveat, what we heard from Robert Mueller and what's been confirmed by the Senate and so many others is not news. We have known that our elections are vulnerable. It's just a question of degree and of the politics around it.
And it doesn't seem to make any difference to Russia that they were caught in the act last time interfering in our election. It hasn't scared them away from continuing?
No, that's exactly right. There are a number of reasons for that. A lot of folks will point to the lack of serious consequences in terms of punishments, but I think that's actually a misreading of the Russians' motivation in the first instance. I think the Russians are doing this for one overwhelming reason, which is that at least the Russian leadership is firmly convinced that they are already in a conflict with the United States. You could even describe it as a war, but then you'd use one of these modifiers like cyber war or hybrid war or Cold War, new Cold War. I'm not a fan of the term war, so I say conflict. But the essence of this worldview on the Russian part is that the United States enjoyed this kind of hyperpower dominance from the 1990s into the 2000s, that it abused its position of strength in the world, including in what Russia considers to be its sphere of influence in Eurasia, so the former Soviet Union states, big swaths of Central Europe, Central Asia, etc., to basically drive an agenda that was favorable to Washington, and that the end goal of all of this, and this is obviously a bit of self-centeredness on the Russians' part, but they can be forgiven for this, we practice it as well, is that the United States is coming after them, that Russia being kind of the major power of Eurasia, historically the big rival to the United States in the 20th century, that ultimately we must be coming for them. This puts them in a frame of mind that they are in desperate defense of their independence and the sanctity of their own state. And that's why they're striking back in their worldview asymmetrically.
But it certainly doesn't look on the outside like the U.S. is coming after them. Listen to President Trump here in Helsinki. This was about a year ago, back in July of 2018, when he was standing next to Russian President Vladimir Putin after a meeting with him. This is what he said.
I will tell you that President Putin was extremely strong and powerful in his denial today. And what he did is an incredible offer. He offered to have the people working on the case come and work with their investigators with respect to the 12 people. I think that's an incredible offer. Okay, thank you.
The 12 people President Trump referred to had just been indicted in connection with the theft of Democratic Party documents ahead of the U.S. elections. But when you hear that, is Trump's avoidance of the subject of Russian interference, and he just made a joke recently, said, you know, to Vladimir Putin saying, don't interfere in our elections, ha, 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 and he wagged his finger at him. Is his avoidance representative of what the entire U.S. government is doing or not doing about this, or is it just him?
That is exactly the right question, Jeremy, because that's the question that really influences the Russian worldview and their decision about whether to continue interfering or to be deterred. And the answer is, of course, from the Russian perspective, Absolutely not. Trump is an aberration. He may be a favorable aberration. He may not be. I think their own jury is still out. They like the chaos. They're not sure they like the results. But they're 100% convinced that what they call, this is their own word, the American establishment, and that means Congress, it means business, it means the so-called permanent government, you know, all the federal employees in the national security establishment, that all of these people are reflexively anti-Russian, and that Trump, in a sense, is just a thin overlay on top of that, and that they need to be in conflict with the American state.
What about Russian interference in other countries? We've heard about it in Germany, France, Norway, all over the world. There's even an investigation into what the Russians may have done ahead of the Brexit referendum back in 2016.
Yeah, I think the same philosophy or the same geopolitical confrontation underlies a lot of this. Certainly with respect to traditional U.S. partners and allies in Western Europe and elsewhere in the world, by the way, which is simply that, you know, they are part of an extended, broad, powerful Western alliance, which is fundamentally aimed at doing harm to Russia. These are also viewed by Russia in many cases as theaters where the conflict with the United States, the principal conflict, unfolds. When you think about, you know, the attempted assassination of spies, when you think about battles for critical information, you know, the Snowden defection, phenomena like that, it is very Cold War-esque. And so it's not surprising that the conflict plays out in third venues as well. And trying to impact the politics of those places is a way of shifting the battlefield, if you will, to make it more favorable. It's a little different in the post-Soviet space. I think we have to be careful to distinguish between a Russian interference in something like an American election or a British referendum and long-standing Russian influence that has to do with deep historic ties, economic, even family and cultural ties between Russia and states in its immediate neighborhood. Those are channels of influence that have always been there and are likely to continue.
Does it surprise you that given everything we know about what Russia is doing around the world to influence elections, that a country as powerful as the United States has such a hard time combating it?
I think this has a lot to do with a kind of hangover in worldview that we're caught up in here in the United States. So part of it is we still think there's some option, some policy lever we can pull, whether it's domestic or foreign, that will get us back to kind of the 1990s. A moment when, you know, everybody wanted to be friends with America, that our enemies were basically much, much weaker than we were, that there were no so-called near peer or peer rivals, you know, like an increasingly assertive China today. And that basically what we had to do was sort of tell the world how it was going to be, and they'd line up, you know, plus or minus. We'd have to sanction here and there, but eventually we'd get what we wanted. And I think that this view is just no longer relevant. And the other problem we have, of course, is domestic. We have created many of the fissures that the Russians and others are seeking to make wider in order to exploit divisions within our own society. Just one thought experiment. Imagine for a second you were in a real war, and you would have the ability, by doing something relatively inexpensive, to cause soldiers on the other side of the line to start sniping at one another and to distrust one another. If you could do that, why wouldn't you do that? I think that's how the Russians see the situation with us.
So what should the United States do to stop Russia from having a big influence in the 2020 election?
Well, I think there are some micro solutions that have to do with, you know, securing the vulnerability of our voter lists and our physical voting processes, always having redundancy so that we don't potentially have to invalidate lots of ballots. But then I think there are much bigger macro solutions. I think we have to make decisions about what is important to us in the internet age. The United States has been the world's leader in freedom of information in the internet. And that's not a space where we can simply create a great wall the way that the Chinese have done and keep foreign influence out. If we do that, we will, by definition, lose that leadership position. So we have to accept that there are going to be foreign voices in our politics. The question is, do we attach transparency to them? Do we have a full and open and robust debate that's consistent with our values, knowing who is speaking and knowing where those voices are coming from? Then I'm confident that Americans can handle it, that having international voices in our politics is not inherently scary, just as having immigrants in our society, international business in our country is not inherently scary. It just has to be transparent.
You know, in having this conversation about Russian election interference, I think it is important to mention that the U.S., of course, has interfered in elections as well around the world.
Yeah, this is an argument that I think is much less central to the Russians' justification of their interference than people think. It's not tit for tat, but it is a background point that the Russians think there's a kind of moral equivalency, that the United States, by promoting free elections, by training activists, political parties, offering financial support to NGOs, which the Russians view as anti-government, threatening to their state, that the United States has been interfering in Russian politics, and therefore the argument could be made what they're doing is justified. But there's really not a lot of symmetry between what the United States has done and actually hacking voting registration or, you know, falsifying NGO or political activists with agents on the ground or in cyberspace. I mean, they're really not the same thing.
That is Matthew Rojansky, who is director of the Kennan Institute at the Wilson Center. Matthew, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Jeremy.